number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
All right, so the Golden State Warriors, are they in trouble if they lose game two in this series to Oklahoma City? That game coming up Wednesday night. We saw the Cleveland Cavaliers roll past Toronto in game one of that series. But game one of the Western Conference Finals, I wasn't ready to assign a real solid meaning behind it. And it's no offense to Oklahoma City, because I got a lot out of that team. I know they're not afraid. I know Russell Westbrook is not impressed with Steph Curry. I know that they know they can win there, and they know they can come back as they came back from a 14-point deficit on the road. If you're Golden State, is this, I don't want to say must win, that's too strong, but how big of a win do you have to get out of a game two? How important is game two in this series? Golden State can win four in a row against the Thunder. They're one of the best teams the NBA has ever seen. So they're certainly capable of winning any given night, as many nights as they need. But psychologically, if you're Oklahoma City and you get two at Oracle, you got to think you're in the driver's seat. Now, I don't think they think that, because they know, hey, at any moment, Steph Curry can bomb in 47 and we'd be done. But it could be enough for the Golden State Warriors to feel pressed, and they haven't felt pressed all playoffs and all season. And then you wonder how they'll break that down. The confidence is riding high for Oklahoma City, no doubt. I don't want to say Golden State would be in massive trouble, because good teams, unless they're facing a 3-0 deficit, are never really in massive trouble. Again, Golden State can win as many games in a row as they need to, as they have to. They're capable of that. There's a difference. They may not, but they're capable of it. You know, look at Toronto. Toronto could make this a 5-game series and beat the Cavaliers in four straight. Very unlikely that they'll do that. But Golden State could win four straight. They're very likely, very capable of pulling that off. But Oklahoma City is not afraid of them, and I think that's a big deal. Sometimes during the regular season, that comes about. You know, when I was in college, high school, I read the book Beowulf. Remember that one? And Beowulf was, you know, he had men, and he was going up against Grendel, and he basically allowed one of his men to be eaten. And I always use that reference in sports, because sometimes you need to see how the monster attacks. Sometimes you need to see, how does this work? My job is to kill this beast. How does the beast attack? What is his strength? What are the possible weaknesses that I can see? That's why people looking at this series during the regular season between the Warriors and the Thunder, and they say, well, it was close, but in the end, the Thunder, they were healthy. It wasn't like they were missing guys, and yet they still couldn't get over the top. They still couldn't beat the Warriors. It's possible that Oklahoma City got more out of that series than we thought. Maybe they came out of that saying, hey, you know what? We were in those games, and we were capable of winning those games. And if we're capable of winning those games, we're certainly capable of winning in the playoffs. What would this mean for Billy Donovan? Coming in from Florida, getting his first head coaching job, people said, wow, he inherited a Ferrari. He may actually get what Scott Brooks didn't get, a healthy Thunder team. And yeah, that happens in this league. If you inherit a team that's got superstars, you're going to play well. They're going to play well. The Thunder are going to play well no matter who is the head coach. But the head coach is responsible for fine-tuning that team and getting that team over hurdles that come their way. I mean, if you have Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, you don't need a ton of NBA coaching experience to at least get 40 wins out of the deal. But there are going to be nights where you need a coach to really fine-tune what you're doing, and that was Billy Donovan. But during the regular season, they only had 55 wins. They almost had 20 wins less than Golden State, and yet they have no fear. None. And that's what makes this series impressive. I think Toronto does not have anything for Cleveland. Saying this earlier tonight, I think his series is dead to the Raptors. Major League Baseball handed down suspensions. Rougned Odor got 8 games for socking Jose Bautista. Bautista got 1 game, and this drew kind of the ire of some people who were wondering, hey, why did Major League Baseball suspend him 1 game? I mean, he was the one that got hit in the face. And the slide, I guess if you break down the slide, it's rough. It's a little rough. It helped start this whole thing. I think everybody that was involved in this deserves some sort of suspension. I'm glad Rougned Odor got 8 games. I know there are people who are saying, oh, well, maybe 5, maybe 4, whatever. Look, you can't do this in baseball. You cannot have a brawl in baseball. You know why you can't have it in baseball, but you can have it in hockey, and you can even have it in football to some extent? The reason you can't have it in baseball is because every single time it happens, it is for the exact reason you know it's happening. Right? Look, when baseball players fight, they really fight. It's not two goons burning off some steam. It's not some sort of message like, hey, you know, we got to do this dance. I'll fight you. You fight me. I'm trying to rile up my guys. You know the drill. NFL fights are ridiculous because, my God, everybody's wearing, you know, helmets and shoulder pads. And, you know, why bust your hand on a helmet? NBA fights can be really vicious, but they're not as prevalent. But when baseball guys get into brawls, when there's bench clearing brawls, or when two guys really duke it out, they're fighting for real. They're fighting to hurt. They're fighting to injure. They're fighting to prove a point. And you cannot have that in baseball. So Rougned Odor, 8 games, appeal it. Whenever that appeal is denied, you serve your 8 games. Did you get your message across? Sure. Is this dead now? I'm hoping. But I think this is going to, if they meet in the playoffs, God knows what's going to come out of that.
The guy I was surprised that wasn't suspended was Josh Donaldson, because if you watch the video.
Donaldson got a slug in there, too.
He got punched, but he also, in the beginning, he just came running through and took out 3 Rangers and was throwing punches. I mean, I think he missed every single one of them, and that's when Odor basically socked him right in the face as well. But, I mean, when a guy comes in the way he did, taking out players, normally that warrants a suspension.
Yeah, that does. They went a little lighter on the Blue Jays than they did the Rangers, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, guys, like John guys Gibbons got 3 games.
Yeah, but Gibbons broke what he came out.
He came out, yes, that's what he had already been
so
ejected.
There's like a precedent for that. Like, that's like, that's automatic. Like, right. You did that, and we got you. That's a separate thing from this. You came out, you've been ejected. You can't do that. So you're suspended. But look, I think I'm glad Bautista got a game. I know there are people saying this is ridiculous. All he did was take a punch. Come on, like, go back and watch the tape. I mean, Jesus, Murgatroyd. He slid in hard. And I know this was the problem with the whole series, as we talked about this earlier in the week. This idea that there are these codes that have to be kept up in baseball, it's almost impossible to follow. So you plunk a guy, and that guy is supposed to go into second base really, really hard. That's kind of the rule. Like, if you plunk me on purpose, then I go in hard. Then baseball said, well, you can't do that anymore. And then people broke down the way he slid into Odor and saying, well, maybe it wasn't as – it didn't really quite break through. I thought he slid in massively hard.
Oh, completely.
Carried the base, for crying out loud.
And then he stood up knowing what he did wrong and looking right at Odor, and that's kind of, I think, what also – pumped Odor up into punching him.
I think that's one of the reasons is baseball said, look, you expected it because of what you did. So, you all have to suffer. You all have to sit down for a little bit. Let's make this clear. I know it was exciting, and I know for a lot of people it was, we'll add a little spark to this series. But if you're Rob Manfred, you can't have this. You can't have this. This is not something that you sit back and go, secretly, this is really good for the game. No, you go, we can't have vigilante justice here.
I thought Jeff Banister should have been suspended 10 games just for waiting till Bautista's last at bat of in the last game they're going to play of the season to do
I'm
this.
I'm sorry. I know some of you Ranger fans have hit me up on Facebook, and you all made really good points, and I understand that some of you were at the game and whatnot. I'm sorry. You can sell me on a lot of things. You cannot sell me on hitting him in a one-run game in his last at-bat of their season series.
Right.
I'm sorry. You can't. That is not cool. If you want him, get him early. Make the statement. Again, this is like, again, if you're going to fight the schoolyard bully, or if you're going to punch you're going to start a fight with a kid, don't wait until your school bus pulls right up to the door so you can throw a punch and then run to the bus and call it a day. Ugh. Well, Major League Baseball responded. I'm Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Continuing through the night tonight, Michael Schmitz is going to join us from Draft Express. We talk NBA draft coming up. The lottery was held. I do like the NBA lottery. I think it is cool. The way they, you know, sit there and... I remember Adam Silver, not so much, but David Stern. I used to love David Stern when he used to read off the envelopes. With the fifth pick, the Charlotte Hornets. I loved him. I miss David Stern. Adam Silver, he's all right, but I miss David Stern. I remember when I was in 1986, Celtics get the number two pick in the draft. It became Len Bias, but I remember going, wow, it's number two pick in the draft. They just won a championship. This is great. The Sixers got the number one pick that year. They took Brad Doherty and they traded it to Cleveland for a bunch of picks. So the Philadelphia 76ers have the number one pick this year, and I'm sure the NBA was just thrilled that the tanking worked. Lakers with the 2, Boston with the 3. Alabama got some really disturbing news about one of their players, left tackle Cam Robinson, arrested in Louisiana. And here's the interesting angle to this. He was charged with Lawrence Hootie Jones was a teammate of his, were arrested in Louisiana. They were in a car, and they were caught with some weed, but they were also caught with a firearm, and that firearm was stolen. Now, according to Louisiana law, the possession of a stolen firearm is a felony. So once again, Nick Saban is in a weird position because he's got a player that was charged with a potential felony. He doesn't know the full story. So he is playing on the defensive side of this, saying, we know what happened, we're going to analyze what happened, and then we will process it. Now, what if these guys come up with a reason why they have the stolen firearm, and they plead this down to a misdemeanor, and they basically get in trouble for the drugs? What will Nick Saban do? Because Cam Robinson is a star left tackle. He is a star left tackle on a team that needs some offensive line help. Ryan Kelly moved on in the draft. They need some offensive line.
He was a top 10 pick in most of the too early mock drafts for next year.
So Saban could have easily said, we have a zero tolerance here. He's gotten arrested. There's possession and a stolen firearm. He is now no longer with the Alabama Crimson Tide. But he has to wait for this to play out. And he should wait for this to play out to see where it goes from the legal system. Now, I know he's going to get ripped if he keeps Cam Robinson on this team. I know he will, because that is the real go-to point for a lot of people. But he's also gone down this road before. He had a player on his team that was accused of beating up his girlfriend and found out later that none of that occurred, and Saban had jumped the gun on that. So here is where I think this is going to go for Nick Saban and Cam Robinson. I do think that this is going to get plead down. I don't think the felony is going to stick. I think there's going to be explanation on all this, and they're going to get charged with some misdemeanor charge. And I think Nick Saban is going to do internal punishment, in-game suspensions and whatnot, while he's still available to Alabama, and he's going to remain on the team. And that is going to drive people crazy. But remember something about Nick Saban. There are two things about Nick Saban that are true. One, he wants to win games and will do what he has to do to win games, and he'll keep people on his team long enough to help him win games. That's a true fact about Nick Saban in Alabama. The second thing about him is that he doesn't want to throw players to the wind. Now, I'm not speaking on the Nick Saban PR firm here, but that is true about him. You can say all day, Nick Saban's going to keep those guys on the team. You know, he's going to keep Cam Robinson on his team because he wants to win games. He doesn't care about the image of his program. If that kid can help him win games, he'll overlook anything. You'd be kind of right about that. But if you also come at it with the, you know, he just doesn't want to throw kids away. He just doesn't want kids destroyed. He doesn't want them to lose opportunity for making a mistake. He wants to keep them and try to build them up. You'd be right there, too. You would be. I've talked to too many people from the Alabama area. I have too many people who've covered Alabama. I talked to too many people that have an axe to grind against Alabama. And they say that about Nick Saban. But they also say, look, he does want to win. But this is a really tricky situation. This really is tricky. Because I think as a society, we are kind of done with guys getting these kind of passes. And getting passes because they're a star player. People will point out quickly, if Cam Robinson was a backup defensive end, and Saban didn't need him, he would probably already been kicked off the team now. It might be correct.
I got a question for you, or kind of a thing that I came across today, and it kind of folds right into the Alabama college football thing. I came across the top 10 most hated football teams in college football. Think you can name them?
Notre Dame.
Nope.
No, it's not in the top five.
I was shocked. Not even in the top 10.
I thought they'd be in the top three.
I did too.
When you have your own television network, you have a tendency to have people really ticked right. off at you.
Nobody likes Notre Dame.
I'm going to say Alabama is on that
list. They are tied for second. Yes.
Ohio State?
Number one with 11% of this poll.
USC?
USC was not on there either, and I was shocked by that.
That was shocking. A lot of people don't like USC.
Right. Especially with Reggie Bush and all that stuff.
I'm going to give you this next guess, and I'm going to, it's because I'm old school. Miami?
No, they're not on there either.
Okay. That they've really softened up over the years.
Yeah, they
if
have.
We did this poll 20 years ago, yes. they would have been 1, 2, and 3 on the list.
It's not Michael Irvin.
Like, can I vote Miami guys. Three times? Because right. I'd like to vote Miami three times.
Yeah.
But they've definitely softened up over the right. years. Texas?
Texas is on there, number four.
Texas is four.
A school you hate is on the list.
Clemson.
No, another one.
Florida.
Florida is number five.
Yeah, Florida is number five. I thought Florida would have softened up too.
Yeah,
because they haven't been very relevant over the last couple of years. So have I got them all yet, or am I missing one?
No, you're missing one from the top five, and then there's the other five that.
All right, I'll Penn State.
No, the other one tied for second with Alabama is Michigan.
Michigan, really?
Yes. There's God, one really? Interesting one at number nine that you would find interesting. That's your alma mater,
South Carolina.
Yep.
Why did you hate South Carolina?
I have no idea, but they are on the list at number nine. That's why I brought
South
this up
Carolina
mainly.
Is like the little tiny sick dog that doesn't bark or bite. How could you hate it?
Number
if anything,
nine.
You feel sorry for it. If anything, you walk by it and go, it wants to be a St. Bernard. It wants to do incredible things. It wants to guard this house like a true guard dog, but its inability to do so makes it kind of sad.
Do you think
that's South Carolina?
Do you think these people just realize that Spurrier's gone yet?
Yeah, I know. I hope
realize
so.
He's not gone.
Well, I tell you what, with like South him. Carolina, accomplished a lot of things. We're on a top 10 most hated football team list. Never thought I'd see the day of South Carolina got some relevance there. I'm glad I'm gone because I hate it too.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue our conversation on the NBA draft that's coming up in June. And why? Because they held their lottery on Tuesday night. Always a fun exercise as Philadelphia gets the number one pick, followed by the Lakers and then the Boston Celtics. So what does the draft look like coming up next month now that we know the order of the teams? Michael Schmitz joins us from Draft Express to help us break down the NBA draft. He joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you, Michael?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. All right, so let's talk about the players in the draft. You know, I look at the list of eligible players and guys that probably will be going in the first round. I see a lot of good college basketball players. Some of that doesn't necessarily translate to the pros. But when you see the players that are available, how deep is this draft?
Yeah, I think it's fairly deep. I think you have a lot of established guys, kind of like you said, seniors who have been productive at the college level, who are going to be, you know, good players in the NBA, a lot of future role player types, I think. But I think the draft is very deep. I don't think it's, you know, full of a ton of star power outside of, you know, Ingram and Ben Simmons. But I think, you know, there's a lot of names and guys who have produced, and then there's a large group of kind of boomer bust upside type of guys as well.
You bring up Simmons and Ingram, and those are the 1-2 guys in this draft. Philadelphia has the one pick, and the Lakers will probably take the other guy that's not picked first. Do you have an early read on Philadelphia and who they like and with that number one selection, who they would probably take?
You know, in terms of who they would take, I think it's still fairly, you know, up in the air. Obviously, you have a new regime there with, you know, the Colangelo, you know, Brian now bringing him in as well, and he's bringing in some of his people. So I think, you know, while Jerry's been there for a little bit now, I think, you know, there's kind of some new direction with, you know, maybe where they want to go with that. If it were me, I mean, I've, you know, thought Brandon Ingram is the best prospect in college basketball and in the draft for the majority of the year. I think he fits them really well in terms of their need for shooting. And I think you can kind of mold him in a lot of different ways. But again, you know, you can't go wrong with Ben Simmons either.
All right, so we go 1-2 here. However those two guys play out. Now the Boston Celtics are at 3. This is where the real fun can begin in terms of breaking down who's going to go in that spot and how does that draft play out from there. What would Boston do with the 3rd pick? Who are the names that are in the consideration for Boston?
Yeah, I think that's the big question, you know, moving forward. I think they're going to kind of dictate a lot of things with what happens after them. I think that, you know, given Danny Ainge's track record and how aggressive he can be, I can see them, you know, trying to move the pick and maybe get a guy who can, you know, help them now, as you saw this year. I mean, with Brad Stevens, they did a really good job making it a lot farther than I think people would have thought coming into the year. So I think they might try and, you know, test the waters and move that and see what's out there. But if that's not a possibility, I think you have, you know, 4, potentially 5 guys who are all in the mix. I think Dragan Bender, 7-1 Croatian big man is a possibility, although there's not a huge track record of Ainge drafting international guys. And then, you know, Jaylen Brown, kind of a controversial prospect, who had an up and down year, but is a big wing. Chris Dunn and Jamal Murray. I think, those are, you know, some of the guys that you would hear, are possible picks for the Celtics.
Even the casual college basketball fan, the guy that kind of watches it on the periphery and then the tournament, got to know Buddy Hield. A lot of talk about him. He was going to be a second-round guy, and then here is in his senior year, he propels himself into the first round. Did he propel himself into a top 10 selection?
I think he has. I think, you know, he's really proven that he can score at an elite rate against really, really good college teams, and he's improved a ton playing with the ball, and his story and trajectory is just really impressive. You know, he's come a long way in his 4 years, and he's really maximized, you know, every opportunity he's had to get better. So I think, you know, with his shooting ability, kind of the way the NBA is going, and then also with his intangibles, he's not a kid you want to bet against. So I think he's really helped himself move into, you know, top 10 territory, and if he slips beyond that, it's not going to be anything more than a couple of spots.
Michael Schmitz joins us in the upcoming NBA draft as the NBA held its draft lottery on Tuesday night. Let me ask you about the lottery. Do you like what the NBA does? Should it go to a wheel format or the other proposals? Do you like the lottery, per se, to sort of sort this out?
Yeah, I don't mind it. You know, I think obviously the more competitive teams will say, hey, let's make it an even playing field. You know, why are we rewarding these teams for tanking? And it'll eliminate, you know, teams like Philadelphia doing this. But I don't have a problem with the lottery. I think the way it's set up is fine. I mean, clearly, you know, it's good for the league if teams like Philadelphia, Los Angeles, you know, improve. And those, you know, especially the Lakers, I mean, that's one of the biggest markets in the country. So I think it's fine the way it is.
I want to ask you about Ben Simmons. Since the second he got to LSU, it was all about getting to the NBA and what he was going to be, a number one pick possibly. Do you see any part of his game that he really needs to work on? Everybody needs a little fine-tuning, and I don't want to talk about that. Is there any part of his game that, boy, he really does need to improve on this if he wants to be a really successful pro?
Yeah, he needs to learn how to shoot. I think that's always been the knock on him. You know, I've been scouting him since he was, 16, 17 years old, and that's always been the knock on him. And for me this year, not just so much not making shots, but not taking shots, especially on a team where he really was the guy and they needed him to, you know, be that and score in the half court. So I think as the season went on, he became much, much easier to scout. He saw a lot more of his flaws. He was kind of anointed the number one pick back in November by certain outlets. And I've never seen that to be the case. I think he's a really, really special talent, but in a league that's where, you know, shooting and length are really important, he doesn't really have either of those. So I think he's going to have some challenges. Again, he's a really, really special talent in terms of his size, strength, you know, mobility, athleticism, and court vision more than anything. But he's no means a perfect prospect and anywhere near kind of the LeBron-level type of guy that people have made him out to be.
For those who follow the NFL draft, and not so much the NBA draft, when the NFL draft rolls around, the conversation is always, does my team take the best player on the board, or do they have to fill a need early in the draft? When the NBA comes around, because it's such a smaller roster, and you may actually have a center that you don't need to replace, for example, do you find out that teams in the first round draft need more or best player more?
I think it's really circumstantial. I think, you know, at the top, within the top seven or eight, these are generally teams that need building blocks and they need guys that, you know, they want to build around for the future. So you're more so looking at best player available. You usually don't have a ton of assets that aren't tradable if you're drafting in the top 10. So I think, you know, when that's the case, unless you're one of these competitive teams that, got a top 10 pick through a trade, you're usually drafting best player available. But then I think, you know, as you move down into the order and you're looking at, you know, teams that are fairly successful and, you know, the Spurs and teams of that nature, you're looking more for role players and guys who can kind of come in and either help right away or a player that you can stash in Europe and you don't want to use a roster spot. So I think it kind of depends, but I think at the top of the draft it's more so need, and then as you continue into the bottom half of, you know, the first round, you get more need based, whereas at the top it's best player available.
NBA draft coming up in June. We're talking to Michael Schmitz from Draft Express here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Great talking to you, Michael. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, coming up next, we'll continue to look at the NBA playoffs and talk draft, but we'll answer some questions on Twitter, and you can ask as well at Tony D Radio. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. We'll get to your tweets coming up next. It is the nighttime here on Yahoo Sports Radio. I am Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D
on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Remember yesterday on the show, if you were listening, I told you the story about how the Atlanta Falcons were building their new stadium and they were going to lower concession prices and they were going to make it affordable for a family of four to actually eat at a game where you could actually get meals for a family of four for less than $30. And I said, this sounds like an onion story. This sounds like a story that is like made up because it's too good to be true. If there's one thing we've accepted as sports fans is that we are going to be gouged when we go to sporting events. We're going to pay $30 to park our car and we're going to pay $100 to eat leftover chicken tenders with warm fries and a stale Coke. That's just the way it goes. Oh, maybe some nachos, maybe a cheap burger, but we're going to get gouged. That's the way it goes. Well, lo and behold, it wasn't an onion story. They're actually doing that. But I tried to find my onion story today. I tried to find the story that was too good to be true or too weird to be true. And I stumbled upon another one where I said, no, this couldn't have possibly happened. And lo and behold, it involves the city of Atlanta again. Freddie Gonzalez, who is the manager of the Atlanta Braves going into his sixth season, was fired after the team started 9-28. They are an awful baseball team. Awful baseball team. However, this is exactly what the Atlanta Braves had set Freddie Gonzalez up to do, was manage a bunch of young kids on a bad baseball team because they got rid of some of their better players as they're trying to rebuild. But apparently the rebuilding does not include going 9-28, one of your worst starts. However, how you fire a guy, I don't know if any of you ever been laid off before, if any of you ever been fired before. I've never been fired from a job, but I have been laid off. I don't know if it's the same thing, but I like to think it isn't. I got fired from a hotel job when I was in college. I was a bellman at a hotel, and part of my job was to set up rooms in for conferences. And yeah, I had to clean them all up. You know, I had to take out chairs and put up tables and, you know, dress it up nice and put out the water pitcher and all that stuff so that conferences could occur the next day. And we kind of had a manager, and she was, let's say she was a manager, but she wasn't, you could tell immediately she didn't have the strength of a manager. She kind of could be pushed around a little bit. You could get away with some stuff and goof off a little bit. And what she was having a bad night, and she told me to go in this room and clean it. And I said something I shouldn't have said, and I kind of blew some kisses her way as she was walking away. And that was enough for her. And the next day I went in and I was told I was let go, that she didn't want to work. So I remember going home, and they sat me down and they explained why I was fired and whatnot. And they explained why they were letting me go. And I remember going home and telling my father, and he went, see, now lesson learned. He's like, I can't believe you did that. Like, well, you learned your lesson. So I've been fired, and I've been fired in a proper way. I was rude to that woman. I should have been let go on the spot. I should have been yelled at. I should have been verbally dressed down. And yet I still got a meeting. I got to explain my case. I got to make apologize. And it wasn't good enough, and I was let go. Freddie Gonzalez was not treated in this manner, and he has done nothing wrong but lose with a bad baseball team. How did the Atlanta Braves fire him, or how did he find out he was being fired? Gonzalez received an email notifying him that he had a scheduled flight to Atlanta on Tuesday. The Braves were in Pittsburgh to finish up a series with the Pirates. The Braves made a decision to fire him, booked his flight home, didn't tell him he was fired, and Gonzalez wondered why he had a flight back to Atlanta before the series was concluded. All right, I get it. You're on the road. Management is back home. They want to let you go as quickly as possible. They want to peel the Band-Aid off quickly. I understand. But you can't book the flight and send it to his email before you at least have a conference call with the man. You owe him that courtesy. I worked at a radio station one time, and the station was being sold and we were all getting let go. And I remember getting the mass email, the email that said all staff meeting tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And I remember thinking, this is it. We're done. Like, That's a bad way to know. This is a terrible way to know. Poor Freddy Gonzalez. He must have been like, gee, I wonder, I got this interesting email. I wonder why I'm on a flight to Atlanta tomorrow. That's interesting. Maybe I should call the bosses and find out why. No, they're not picking up. John Capella's office. Hi, this is Freddie. Oh, yeah, hi, Freddie. I got an email saying I got a flight to Atlanta. I don't know if you misbooked this or something, or is there any reason why I'm on this flight tomorrow as I prepare for the Pirates? Oh, yeah, yeah. About that, Freddie. Listen, there's no other way to say this, so I guess I'll just get right to the point. We got to let you go. John, I could kind of figure that out. Because I didn't think you'd want the manager of the baseball team to be on a flight to Atlanta when, I don't know, he's supposed to be managing against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Really, really odd conversation that must have been. I hope Freddy Gonzalez gets another job. I really do. I think he will. I hope he does. Because Atlanta, the Braves set him up for this. They got rid of good players. They left him with young, bad players. And he's trying to grow into good Major League Baseball players. And to be honest with you, this was a firing that you could have predicted at the beginning of the season if you were smart in the Atlanta Braves office. You basically given him a minor league roster and told him to win major league games with it. In February, you knew this was going to take place. You knew the team was going to be bad. What would have been good for the Atlanta Braves at this time? They're 9-28, right? That means they've played 37 games. What would have been good? 15-22? What would have been better? 9-28 is about what the Atlanta Braves really are.